Look, I'm not defending it against other movies. I'm just saying Ernest Goes to Jail is the Dennis Rodman of film. It's very misunderstood, but the stats do not lie.
Live from Monster Dome, deep underneath and yet somehow still five stories above Austin, Texas, this is Inside the Locker, the geekiest sportscast you've ever heard.
Welcome, sports nerds, to your show, your sportscast, your base. Well, they still all belong to us. You've stepped inside the locker. We're happy to have you here. Join our coven and don't mind the smell. I am your host, Brian Salisbury, three times acquitted of having to watch Ernest Goes to Jail for a 27th time. And I am joined by Elliot Fontanette, our lawyer.
Ow!
Nice. JC DeLeon, our man with the plan.
Yes, I am.
And Adam Beef Nuggets, Charles, our man with the beef nuggets.
Delicious.
So delicious. So delicious. Guys, how has your week been? Good. Yes. Excellent. We are. That's called. That's.
It was fun. At my birthday party. That was good.
I'm glad we know how to shoot the shit like regular human beings.
Had my one hangover for the year.
Oh, yeah. Elliot's birthday party. Sucked. That was
a good time.
That was a rager.
You know what? I've never really had a hangover before.
Stop fucking bragging.
No, I haven't really. I've never really had. I've gotten drunk plenty of times.
It's not that much fun.
As fun as it sounds, Adam, it's not super fun.
Yeah, I've had two.
Describe a hangover to me. Exactly.
It's like being sick.
Yeah, it is like being sick. Like you wake up and you have a horrible headache, mm-hmm. and you're tired. And you wake up tired and you have a headache and you just feel lethargic.
But yet,
you want the greasiest food that you can imagine.
That's true, but then you lay down and you think, as long as I lay down, I'll be fine. That's not true at all.
Sometimes the greasy food isn't, because the story of my first hangover was actually the first time that I ever drank. I was 16 in high school, and it was the day.
Lawbreaker.
Yeah, and it was the
partaker.
It was the day before Thanksgiving, and so
just even better.
Yeah, and so Thanksgiving morning, I get up after I blacked out a good portion of the night.
Wow.
And when my friend woke me up in the morning, I was at his house. He informed me that I like threw up all over his living room. And so,
so you're just making room for Thanksgiving dinner.
So he was going to make me clean it up, and he didn't have anything in the house to clean it up with. And so I had to walk to my house to get a vacuum cleaner to get it. And my mom was like, why are you taking a vacuum cleaner to your friend's house? And I'm like, oh, it's because we spilled stuff.
Fuck it.
I spilled my insides.
Yeah. And then the rest of the day, I'm just like sick and like not talking to anyone. And as soon as I eat food, I throw it all up.
That's the worst.
Yeah. And my dad knew exactly what was going on.
He's probably just laughing the entire time.
And so did my cousins.
Can't fool dad. Yeah, you cannot fool
dad. The only
dad.
One who was oblivious was my mom.
That's the best thing about dads. Like when you get to a certain age, your dad knows that like, I can't really punish him in the same way. But I know he was a dumbass. I'm just going to laugh at him the entire fucking time.
Yeah.
Yeah, my dad's the kind of like, he wouldn't actually get on me, but he would find the best way to fuck with me.
Oh, yeah.
Like he would completely advantage of the situation.
Like, he'd come behind you if you had a hangover, just go, as he just claps, right in your ear.
And meanwhile, my mom's like, is that really all you can drink, pussy?
Yeah. there was the day in high school, my dad came into my room, and he was like, hey, you know you parked your car on the lawn, right? I was like, I did. He goes, don't worry, I moved it for you, but don't do that again.
If you want to hear more stories about JC debauchery, make sure to follow us on iTunes or Stitcher. You can also follow us on Twitter at ITLcast and like the website on Facebook, facebook.com/oneofusnet. You may also consider getting yourself a free ebook courtesy of this episode's sponsor, audible.com. You know how books have all that paper and paper is like super old fashioned?
Paper cuts.
This is like books that you don't have to turn the pages because you listen to them. It's amazing. Poetic. You don't even have to use your eyes to read these books. It's outstanding. Go to audible.com. You can go to audibletrial.com/oneofus and get yourself a free audiobook. If you do that, you're also supporting us, which we really appreciate it. And we appreciate our sponsor, audible.com. And definitely consider becoming a subscriber. We got two exclusive podcasts right now that is certainly going to grow. Lots of new content that's going to be in there soon. So definitely get on that.
Before we start, I want to give a shout out to honestly, like it, I was so drunk I forgot his name because one of the listeners who was at my party, he was really cool.
You're talking about Ian Hood.
Ian
Hood's been a longtime fan. It was really nice to meet him in person. Nice kid from Wisconsin. Came down, hung out at Elliot's birthday. He and I went and got barbecue, talked about movies.
good guy. Thank you so much for coming and visiting. Guys, if you're ever in Austin, hit us up. More often than not, we're going to be able to hang out at least once. It's a good time here, and if you're over 21, please, please do not hesitate to buy us beer. Yeah. I said that as if we're all 19 or something.
Right.
But I just got carded when I picked the
you
beer.
You did.
I'm like, the receding hairline doesn't give it away. Like the fucking business shirt that the general malaise on my face doesn't make it look like I'm over 21.
Yeah.
It could be an act.
It could be. It could be a very, it could be a ruse, Elliot. An elaborate ruse. Well, I think it's time for a little IMDebo! Or formerly called March Movie Madness. We played this game once, and you guys really seem to enjoy it out there, so that's how we're going to start the show. We're going to eschew our usual schedule. We're going to go right into the game. And now, if you didn't follow the show where we played this, basically what we do is we go March Madness-style tournament from 16 to 8 to 4 to 2, and the way we do this is that we all pick movies, and in this case, we had a topic. It was sports movies. We each pick a movie around the circle, and we're going to start with 16 words, the first 16 words of the IMDb synopsis, and then we're going to see, of the other three people listening, who can guess it first. And then in the next round, it's going to go down to 8, and then we're going to skip 4 and go to this new thing that we've invented called the number 2. We didn't invent the number 2. We invented the round where we only... In that round, it won't be the first two words of the synopsis. It'll be the most important two words of the synopsis. So, yeah, who wants to kick this one off?
Oh, well...
Elliot, go for it.
This is the 16 one. Okay.
So the first... Okay, so JC, Adam, and myself, the first person to figure it out, just yell it out.
Okay. I think I'm going to get this one.
Okay, let's try
it. And this is sports films we're doing.
Yeah.
Right? This is all sports films, every single one of these.
Labeled an outcast... by his brainy family.
Goon!
Shit! Did you have that fucking memorized?
Brainy family. Outcast. Gotta be Goon. Plus, I know you. Goon it is. 1 point for Brian. People are gonna think I edit. Like, people are gonna think I stopped.
Right, no shit. Like,
edited, and then that was all one take, baby. And the tape don't lie.
Amazing.
You're welcome.
He's Rain Man. That's
actually, he's gonna, the way he's gonna edit this, he's gonna say the answer first, and then you're gonna read, the description afterwards. It's like Jeopardy.
Hey, is it hockey season yet? It's still hockey season.
It is hockey season.
They're about to be in the playoffs,
right?
Yeah,
they're about to start the playoffs, yeah.
Does anyone know who's playing in the hockey playoffs?
I don't.
We should keep up with hockey more.
The only news items from... I didn't write down any of the names, but two different injury instances, because the pain threshold that these guys have is amazing.
It is pretty amazing.
One guy this week took a skate to the face.
What?
And had, only missed one game. I don't think... Actually, he didn't play the rest of that game, and then I don't think he actually technically missed a game.
Just like how, that's that like was, how people come to life.
Yeah.
That was Red Wings Drew Miller, who took a skate to the face.
Yeah, the video is kind of funny. Like,
hilarious.
These guys, these guys get hurt, and usually it takes, like, a fucking army to get him off the ice. As soon as he takes a skate to the face, he kind of skates off, and he's, like, calling for the trainer, which you never see. But obviously he was okay.
He's like, so half my cheek is gone.
Like, yeah, did they take off their skate and use it as a weapon like Happy Gilmore style? Or did one guy fall and somebody stepped over him?
One guy was falling and his leg kind of kicked up in the air and just skated to the
face. He waved it like he just didn't care.
A great idea would be, we have a corner man, why would we get a hockey lady or something?
We do need, a hockey lady would be amazing. If you're a female hockey fan who listens to this show, and I think there's about... female who listens to this show. Thanks, Chaos Bulldog. If you happen to be into hockey, let us know. We'll set you up with a regular segment because that's one of the sports that we don't cover well. So
that's a better way to do it. Instead of having to like say to get up on it because we all have like jobs and shit.
Yeah.
Just sit down and watch like sports as much as I would love to.
Yeah.
All fucking day just to have somebody that this is their passion.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
JC, it is your turn.
Yep. In 1981 in LA, Boom Baby moves in next door to other Boom Baby.
I should explain for the people at home. If the first words that you're reading include a character name or an actor name or whatever, you replace it with Boom Baby. So start over, please.
Okay. In 1981 in LA, Boom Baby moves in next to other Boom Baby. They're 11 and both want.
Hoop Dreams.
Rookie of the Year.
Nope.
They're 11.
1981.
He got game?
Nope.
No.
Oh, you're right.
So somebody moves.
It's 1981
LA. 11-year-olds, you said, right?
Yeah, and they move in next door to each other, and they both want. What do they both want? Striving. It's a competition between the two of them.
Yeah. It's both definitely want. A competition.
This is a sports movie.
Mm-hmm.
I will sacrifice my point. I've decided this is a rule. I will sacrifice my point to get the year of release.
Oh, okay. So we can actually buy.
Yeah.
We can,
I'm going to buy the year of release. Gonna, okay. So we can. Although buy you both get to hear it, so I got to work out a better system than this. But JC, what's the year release of the movie?
2000.
Oh.
Okay. So two 11-year-olds. The movie made in 2000. And we are all back to 0 points. I wish I had not wasted that point.
Okay, made in 2000. It's yeah,
set in 1981 though.
Set in 1981.
What is a sports movie from 2000 that is set in the
80s? Yeah, I know. No, I don't know.
I don't know if it's a traditional sports movie because
it may not be. As long as it's
a coming of age slash sports movie.
Yeah, yeah, no, it is totally. But it's what is it? 2000.
Well, think about it. It's not gonna be hockey. Probably baseball or basketball.
Two 11-year-olds and both want to be. They both want to be wrestlers. Wait a minute. Is this above the ring?
Above the rim? No.
No, 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 not above for the rim. The David Arquette wrestling movie.
Oh, no. Oh. Ready to Rumble.
Oh, Ready to Rumble. Yeah, yeah, that's right. Shit. I may have to give up on this one.
I think I'm stumped.
Yeah, where
think
I'm not done yet.
Oh, Elliot's still on this. Elliot's still on this.
This makes for dead air, makes for just great radio.
That's okay. I can cut most of it out. I won't though.
If it's okay, it's 1981, it's two friends, they're competing.
They're both
probably
11.
A girl involved.
And a movie in 2000, like that's the part that kills me, because I would have just graduated high school around this time, yeah. So I should know exactly what this is.
Two 11-year-olds who move in next door to is this 61?
No.
Damn it.
Okay, I'll give up.
Yeah, what is it?
It's Love and Basketball.
Oh my God! Damn it!
We were on the right track.
When you said two friends, I thought two guys. Yeah,
it was a little confusing because I couldn't identify. We should identify, I guess, a male boom baby and a female boom baby. I don't know.
No.
Boom baby.
Boom baby.
Boom
baby.
Yeah, it's. I've mentioned it on the show as the first DVD I ever bought. But yeah, it's just a movie I love in general. Yeah. But speaking of Love and Basketball, it's an awesome segue into a Dirk Nowitzki story from that happened this week.
See, I thought it was going to be the segue into a different story, but go with yours and then I'll give mine. And you I'll let Adam and Elliot decide which is the better segue.
Well, because it involves a tool of love, kind of.
So does mine, kind of. If you're talking about a dick, I'm going to be very disappointed or happy.
Yeah. So earlier this week, Sean Livingston was suspended for a game because the Warriors played the Mavericks. And during the game, Sean Livingston, whether it was an accident or not, kind of reached up and grabbed Dirk's, you know, nether region.
He grabbed the Nowitzki.
Yeah.
A little Dirk.
He grabbed his Dirk.
Yeah. Grabbed a Dirk or Dirker.
And so the funny thing about that is the next day, I don't understand the circumstances of this. All I know about this audio clip that I heard is that he was at Six Flags. And somebody was asking him about it.
That's right. Whenever I get touched.
Yeah. And Dirk said, after, like, when it happened, Sean was talking to me about it, I guess, to apologize. But then he also said that for a white guy, it was pretty impressive.
That shit just reminds like, that is something a brother would say. Like, that shit, it reminds me, like, I watched the Trevor Noah stand up last night.
Yeah.
And he's like, the crazy thing about black guys, and the way y'all talk is so cool, it's like, you can make somebody feel good just for being them. It's like, that you? You? It's like,
yeah. That's pretty funny. Yeah. That's pretty funny. Although, here's mine. Okay. So, you know how people in love like to do everything together? You know, they go to the...
Ryan's fallen in love.
They go to the park. They go to bars together. They go to bars late at night together. They go to bars late at night, 4 a.m. in New York together. They get stabbed together. Oh, wait, that last part shouldn't happen, but totally did to Chris Copeland and his, was it his girlfriend?
His wife.
His wife, who got stabbed outside of a New York nightclub early on Wednesday, as did, also involved, but not stabbed, were two Atlanta Hawks players. The Pacers were there to play the Knicks, the Hawks were there to play the Nets, and everybody getting stabbed out here.
Yeah, they had, the crazy part about it, they had just landed. And so they had landed a few hours before and went to this nightclub. And so it's 4 a.m. They both have a game not more than, I guess, a little more than 12 hours from that point. Mm-hmm. But they do have to get up like in 7 hours from that point for shoot around. So yeah, this is crazy that it shines a light on, I guess,
why Indiana's not winning right now.
Well, yeah.
Shut your face.
It shines a light on the kind of life that these guys lead and how late they party and stuff like that. Even J.R. Smith that came to Cleveland, he's been playing awesome. You know why?
Because there's not shit to do in Cleveland.
There's nothing to do in Cleveland. And he's not at the club at 4 a.m. like he was in New York.
Yeah. So
you know what? It's crazy how you know, with that being, maybe that's the reason why the New York Knicks suck all, like, all the live long day. It's because they can't not stop partying.
Yeah. It's going to be interesting, like, the aftermath of this, because I think part of the reason why the NBA teams instituted things like shoot-arounds is so that players don't go out the night before, because shoot-arounds are done in the morning right before a game.
Yeah.
I think this is going to, there's probably going to establish some new policies and curfews and things like that, saying, don't go to the club at 4 in the morning.
Don't fucking do that.
Well, I mean, why wouldn't you just write that into the guy's contract anyway? I mean, yeah. if I'm going to be...
You can't enforce that.
Can you not?
You can't enforce, like, you can't go somewhere.
Roger Goodell's trying to. He's failing, but he's trying to.
Like, you can't be like, you can't go to this place at 4 a.m. in the morning. It's unreasonable.
Yeah.
Why not? Yeah.
Well, you know what?
Because, like, it starts looking like an... I don't know. Unless you're paying specifically for that shit.
It's like... what if it's a policy? Companies have policies.
You can't show up to work drunk.
But there's a limit. There's
but you also can't tell people... Like my job couldn't tell me, okay, you get off at 4:30, but you can't go to a bar afterwards.
Yeah.
I would fucking quit.
Yeah. It's like, that's a little bit too much.
I'm just saying. Hey, back to the game. Adam, it's your turn.
Me up.
You up with the 16 round.
Okay. So... A semi-fictional account of life as a professional football, American-style, player, loosely based on the Boom Baby team of the early 70s.
Say it again?
Oh, Unnecessary Roughness.
No.
Say it again.
Okay, so a semi-fictional account of life as a professional football, American-style, player, loosely based on the Boom Baby team of the early 70s.
The early 70s would have been either the Raiders or the Steelers. So there's a movie, okay, it's a movie about a football player that is semi-biographically based on either a Steelers or Raiders player from the 70s.
The Express.
No, that was a Cleveland Browns player, if I'm not mistaken.
The Invincible?
No. Actually, it's a good guess.
And it's not Unnecessary Roughness. It's not The Longest Yard, obviously, because that involves prisons.
And apparently you have no points to buy anything. So.
I have no points to buy shit right now, which would have been really helpful.
Okay. A semi-fictional account of life as a professional football player, loosely based on the Boom Baby team of the early 1970s.
It's got to be the Steelers.
Now that I think about it, I'm not even sure if any of you guys have even seen this movie. But you may know what it is.
It's not Unnecessary Roughness. It's not... Damn you, Adam. Damn you. I give up. I got nothing.
You?
JC? The Last Boy Scout. I'm sure parts of that happened.
You know what? I never would have even thought about that to be a sports film, but it completely qualifies as being a sports film.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
Like, it centers around sports gambling, and it's a... Yeah? Damon Wayans was a... former professional football player. Anyway, the movie is North Dallas 40.
Oh, is that what that's about?
Okay. Yeah.
The Dallas team of the early 70s.
Yeah, it's based on the Dallas Cowboys team of the 1970s. Shit. I'm a Dallas Cowboys fan.
Yeah,
is
that
the first thing you would have thought about?
I failed. I should have come up with that.
I didn't know enough about that plot and that it was like centered around one person, I guess.
It's not really centered around completely around Nick Nolte, but the movie is mostly, I guess, about him. It's actually a pretty funny movie.
I feel really stupid for not knowing that. Hey, you know who is really stupid that plays in football now is Rob Gronkowski. But that has not stopped him from writing a book, apparently, called I Am Gronk, or Me Gronk, You Not.
Is he writing the book?
No, he's writing the book.
Oh, I think it's autobiographical.
Okay. So every other page is just going to be blah, 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 pussy.
Titties.
Yeah.
I see no problem.
And here's the best part of this. This stupid, horrible human being is having his book published by another stupid, horrible human being. Because isn't it Alex Rodriguez?
It's Derek Jeter.
Oh, it's Derek Jeter's. Thank God. Okay, thank God. That makes this slightly less horrible a story.
Yeah.
But yeah, guys, so audible.com, if you want to save that free download and wait for Rob Gronkowski, I swear to God, he better read it himself so that he can mispronounce words in his own book.
It should be Morgan Freeman reading the Gronk book.
Well, then I scored a touchdown. Gronk was happy. Gronk spiked the ball.
Yeah, you brought up A-Rod. I did want to talk about the way he kind of started the season off.
That's right. He's playing again.
Yeah.
That sucks.
The day of the Yankees' first game and opening day, I don't know if he tweeted out or somebody tweeted out this picture of him getting off of his own private plane, has A-Rod plastered all over it. The steps say King A-Rod on it. And he's just like, that's the way to get people on your side.
Yeah. Douche nozzle.
And that, his walk-up song, his first walk-up song, is Pardon the Interruption interlude by Jay-Z, in which he starts out the song, Allow me to reintroduce myself. My name is Hove. And then it starts out.
You know what should be his walk-up song? I'm sorry, so sorry. Yeah. That should be his fucking walk-up song. But fuck that guy. Back to the game.
I've really got to be. I'm actually really surprised how well received he was on opening day. Like, I mean, if you read the stories, like, apparently the cheers for him outweighed the boos.
That's people in New York. I'm sorry, Yankees fans. You have proven yourselves to be morons. You have proven it.
Honestly, I think all it has to really come down to is like, oh, maybe he might be able to help us win. So
desperation.
Good hitter. All he has to do is play his hit because he's going to be a DH. He's never going to see the field.
Yeah.
Yeah. Why not?
All right. Here's my round of 16. Boom. Boom Baby's GM, Boom Baby, is handicapped with the lowest salary constraint in baseball. If he ever wants to win...
Moneyball.
Moneyball is correct. I think Elliot got it first. Yeah. Moneyball. All right, that moves us into the round of 8. The round of 8. Do you have yours, Elliot?
I got mine.
All right, Elliot's got his. Let's do this. That's not it.
If it names that was my guess. But it's very central to the plot, can I use a...
Say Boom Baby. Yeah, yeah.
Okay. In Boom Baby, Boom Baby, an indie rock-loving misfit.
Okay. Mystery Alaska?
Nope.
Indie rock loving.
Okay, but think about it. He left out a word that is very... A place.
It's a place, yeah.
That is specific. So it's probably in the...
That sport. So, and it is a sport.
Oh, okay. And Boom Baby, Boom Baby.
I will give you all a hint. Just to be clear, it's a non-traditional sport.
Yeah, I figured when you said it is a sport so defensively, I figured it probably wasn't one of the main four. You said he's an indie rock lover?
I said the character's an indie rock lover.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, and read it again.
In Boom Baby, Boom Baby, an indie rock loving misfit.
Because that's in place, name, an indie rock loving misfit.
Yeah.
Okay. In city, state is what I would imagine. In Chicago, Illinois.
No, it's not city, state.
It's Misfit Fines.
I think it's...
Misfit Fines, okay. You don't think it's city state?
No, I don't think it's city state.
It's city state.
Oh, it is?
Yeah, said Boom Baby, Boom Baby. So it's two things.
I thought it was saying in Boom Baby, comma, Boom Baby.
No, like
Boom Baby
being the guy's name. No, it's definitely city state.
Boom Baby, city.
Okay, so Philadelphia. So Chicago, Illinois, Los Angeles, California, Philadelphia, PA. I could do this all day.
I don't know how that's going to help.
Lake Placid, New York.
Think about it. Okay, so it's a non-traditional sport, and the location is.
Oh, wait a minute. No, it's not Cool Runnings.
An indie rock misfit?
Indie rock misfit. So a guy who maybe played in a band? Indie rock misfit.
Is this the Great White Hype?
Nope.
Oh, that's a good guess then.
Oh, yeah, that is a good guess.
I'll give you another hint.
I guess you might as well, because we are fucking...
It's a phrase that if you're on the right track, this will key it for you. It's going to turn the page.
We should not be playing this game. Bob Seger, turn the page. Turn the page. Beep. Turn the page. Turn.
Okay, I'll give you the location.
Yes, I think you probably should.
Yeah, okay. In Bodine, Texas, an indie rock loving misfit.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, how is that going to help?
Fuck. I think
he knows it.
Bodine. God damn it.
Bodine, Texas. Oh, is this the fucking rodeo movie? Oh,
no,
8
no.
seconds?
Is this Whip It?
Yeah!
There it is. Well done, Adam. Yeah. Come on. All right. That's a point for Adam, who at this point I think is the only one who has a point. Which... Elliot have a point too. I'm sorry. Elliot has a point as well. I'm the... Sorry, that sounded really funny. Elliot has a point, guys. Pay attention. It does happen. Okay, JC, your round of 8, sir.
A dramatization of the life of Boom Baby with... Well, the last word is with, so I guess that's not important.
You fucker. A dramatization?
A dramatization.
Invincible, The Express, 42, Ali, fucking...
Wait, read it again.
It's not gonna help. Motherfucker picked the most vague one he could.
A dramatization of the life of Boom Baby.
Brian Song.
Words.
It's a dramatization of the life of. So it's one. It's one individual.
Yeah. Okay. That's okay. Well, that narrows it down. Thanks, Adam.
Okay. Of the life, not of the career or something.
Now we're getting somewhere. Okay. It's got to be a famous athlete.
Well,
it has
dude,
to
they
be.
Had a Benny the Jet Rodriguez in that, so I was like,
yeah, but it's got to be somebody famous. It has to be. It has to be a biopic.
Space Jam. Pride of the Yankees.
Mm-mm. Bang the Drum Slowly.
Nope.
Are we going back to The Babe?
No.
I
just meant Babe for a second. That'll do.
That'll do. God damn it!
A dramatization Fuck. Of the life.
We're on the right track. It's we just haven't picked the right person.
It's a life of person.
Is it the movie with Bear Bryant? I forgot the name of it. Junkyard Junction Boys or something?
Oh, that was actually a pretty good movie. That sounds like a made-for-TV movie.
Yeah.
61. No. Fucking, I'm going to guess that all day.
Yeah.
Shut up, it'll be right.
Have you even seen the movie?
Yes.
There's no 11-year-olds in that movie whatsoever.
Shut up.
Oh, there are 11-year-olds in this movie?
I thought maybe they would have started off as 11-year-olds.
Oh my gosh.
So we're going back around. We're going the wrong direction.
Above the rim?
But you're...
Oh, it's close, so it's basketball. Okay, it's basketball.
Yeah.
It's basketball. Whose Life? Whose Life in Basketball got a movie? Not Michael Jordan. Space Jam would have been right
I
in that case.
I have mentioned it on the show, though it is obscure.
Hang with Mr. Cooper.
The sixth man.
He got game.
No.
Love and Basketball. We already did that one. Basketball Diaries.
No.
Shit.
Hoop Dreams.
No.
Hoosiers.
I'm out of basketball.
Who the fuck came up with this game?
Okay, I mentioned Life, and it's a basketball movie.
What's the name of that movie? The one about Earl Manigault. Yep, the Goat.
Rebound.
Rebound. Yeah, thank you.
All right, okay. Fantastic. All right, Adam gets another point. Yeah. Well done, sir. Well done. And do we have anything to segue off of that?
Well, I got one.
Oh, you got one?
If you want to talk about Goat, you talk about the greatest of all time. This is not a news story that got sent around, but... This guy who used to play for the Charlotte Hornets when Alonzo Mourning was there and Larry.
Oh, Kendall Gill? Kendall Gill is one of my favorites.
I love Kendall Gill.
I had a lot of favorites when I growing up.
He posted a story on Twitter where he was like, "You want to see what it's like when you challenge the man and you ain't ready for it?" apparently he was talking a bunch of shit to Michael Jordan during, like, I think it was a 1992 game. And just because, like, they were sort of beating him and they were giving it to him, and Michael Jordan just, like, backdoored off of a triangle offense and just slammed. Screamed in the crowd and then screamed again.
Yeah,
it's like, fuck you!
It's one of the more famous, like, of all the famous Jordan highlights. It's the one where he dunks on Alonzo Mourning and he kind of clenches both fists and he's just, like, not really screaming to anybody. He's just kind of, like, screaming to himself and just, like, screaming. His clenches, you know, his arms are flexed, his fists are clenched, and it's just, like, I don't know. Yeah, I guarantee you've seen the clip if you look it up on the internet. If you look up the story with Kendall Gill, like, you've seen that and been like, oh yeah, that's one of the more famous Jordan clips.
It's like, don't talk shit to the greatest player of all time.
Yeah, Reggie Miller had a story like that where he was on Jimmy Fallon and he talked about the first time he talked smack to Jordan, and Jordan went for like 40 that night.
That's my favorite thing. Honestly, there's a lot I like about Jordan. My favorite thing about Jordan is he kept Reggie Miller from ever winning a championship.
Hey! What the fuck are you hating on Reggie Miller for?
Because he's a dick.
Oh, come on.
There was this ESPN, like, I think it was a 30 for 30, where they're talking about Knicks versus the Pacers and how Reggie Miller just trolled the shit out of John Starks.
Look.
And just was like,
John Starks fucking deserved it, first of all. Oh, second, they were as much shit talkers as the Pacers were. They hired a guy to sit in the front row, a fucking film director who shall not be named Spike Lee because he's terrible, to sit there and trash talk the other teams. I'm sorry, he was on their fucking payroll.
Yeah.
I
thought it was the shoes.
It may have been the shoes. Okay, so whose turn is it? Who's turn back to the game? All right, Adam, go for it.
All right. Boom Baby is a college basketball coach who wants a big promotion.
It's a college basketball coach who wants a big promotion, and you're not saying the name of the character, which is interesting.
Well, okay, you know what? I don't think the character's name is going to help you guys in any way, so I'm going to give you the character's name.
Okay.
Jimmy Dolan. Jimmy Dolan is a college basketball coach who wants a big promotion.
Blue chips. Yeah,
no. You get that one.
No.
Oh fuck! All right, shit. I got a cocky.
That's the only one I know. Like,
he wants a big promotion.
Man, I know this one too, but I can't.
Jimmy Dolan. Actually, that name does ring a bell.
Yeah,
Jimmy Dolan.
Is this set in the modern era or in the past?
Modern era. Oh, it was modern era for the time that a movie was made.
Okay.
Which isn't that
Jimmy
long
Dolan? Is that Hoosiers?
No,
that's not Hoosiers.
No,
Jimmy Dolan.
College basketball.
Hoosiers was about college basketball. No.
High school.
Oh, that's right. Fuck.
And you're from Indiana. You should.
Fuck you. I only saw it for the first time 2 years ago. Don't tell my parents.
Wait, hold on. You're from Indiana. And the first time you're
Don't dwell on it.
And
you gotta dwell on it.
Don't dwell on it.
And you watch movies.
Don't you dwell on it.
The first time you saw Hoosiers, arguably the greatest, arguably the greatest sports film of all time.
Yeah,
you just saw 2 years ago.
Yeah. So Jimmy Dolan is a college.
They had to have made you watch that in school.
Shut the fuck up. I know, it's terrible, okay? I hate myself for it. Stop rubbing it in.
Less time in the theater and more time, you know, watching movies, dude.
That's the weirdest, like, out of context, you sound like you're having a stroke.
Yeah.
Get out of the theater and watch some movies. Yeah. What, like in the street?
Yeah, stop watching all those movies and watch more movies. Yeah.
Jimmy Dolan. Jimmy Dolan is a college basketball coach who wants a big promotion.
This is going to piss me off.
Jimmy Dolan. Jimmy Dolan, come on down.
I don't know.
Fuck.
I give up.
Would you rather have clues or rather than me just tell you?
One clue.
Yeah.
Okay. I'll give you the location of the movie.
Okay.
Africa.
Oh, the air up there.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Well, that's a tie.
Yeah.
Okay, so everybody now has a point. Elliot has two. No.
I have one.
You have one. Adam has two?
Yep.
You have two. Okay, yeah. So Adam's winning. All right. Here is my round.
Segue.
What's going on, JC?
So the NCAA championship is this week, and Duke was victorious over Wisconsin. As is usual with this sort of thing, there was controversy with the referees. There was a lot of bad calls on the Wisconsin win over Kentucky, although it was bad calls on both sides. Like, there was a dude got slapped in the face from Wisconsin, and there was no foul called on Kentucky, and then later on, Wisconsin ended up making a basket slightly past.
FYI, they should allow slaps.
Totally.
You should totally be allowed to slap.
I agree.
Wisconsin scored a basket slightly after the shot clock buzzer went out, but by league rules, it was outside of 2 minutes, so they couldn't review it. In the Wisconsin-Duke game, when there was 2 minutes left, Wisconsin was down by five. A ball went out of bounds, and there was some debate as to whether or not Justice Winslow from Duke had touched it. Every replay showed that he touched it. Every replay that they showed, slow motion, fast motion, it was obvious to everyone in the building except for the three referees that Justice Winslow touched that ball.
Mm-hmm.
The day after the championship, the NCAA head of officiating came out and said, well, the referees don't have the same view that the people at home do.
No, they have a better one. It's called being on the court.
Right. Well, the day after that, the NCAA vice president came out and said, oh, sorry, that guy misspoke.
The guy misspoke, we mean, was totally fucking wrong.
That guy should shut the fuck up.
The referees totally had the same view that everybody at home did, which still doesn't explain why they made the wrong call.
If anyone is still out there defending the NCAA, just stop it immediately. Just stop.
Well, yeah. I mean, I can see it from a few different perspectives. Like, it's a horribly blown call.
Which they can't, apparently.
Yeah. But, like, I mean, there is something to be said for being in that moment, being on the floor, like, all that adrenaline. It's easy for us when we're sitting down to, like, see, like, that's a horrible call.
Is there really that much adrenaline if you're just officiating the game, though?
I think there is. I mean, it's a job, and you're running up and down the court.
I mean, like, yeah, I guess.
I'm not trying to be funny, but have you seen, like, the way, what's his name, guy's old white referee, he's in the NBA, I mean, he...
Dick Pavetta?
Yes, the way he just, like, the technical foul, he just makes these big...
He's like Mike Carey, the dramatic black referee in NFL. I love that guy.
They get into it, and if you're going up and down, you just want to get this, you just want to do your best, and you're going through the game, sometimes that can happen. Now, what they need is just, they need sometimes to just say, better training, but...
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, because the only alternative is if it wasn't that, then they're shaving points.
Yeah.
There's a bet going on that they're trying to make enforced.
Possibly.
Yeah, it's just the ridiculousness of the head of officiating one day saying, oh, they didn't have that angle, and then the next day his
somebody's lying.
Like, yep, they did.
Somebody's lying.
I mean, look, reading the article, apparently, like, there is potential, like, actually a strained relationship between the referees and the NCAA even prior to the game.
Hmm.
That's the way they made it sound in the article. I don't know.
Well, for my round of eight, getting back to the game here, I'm going to give you the names because I don't think that's going to help. I will give you the hint that it's a movie that has been mentioned so far during this game.
Okay.
Antoine and Kenny...
I was going to say, it's only because you mentioned, like, every movie.
Shut the fuck up. Antoine and Kenny Tyler, NCAA college basketball players...
The sixth man.
Yes! That is correct. Wow, well done, JC.
I actually kind of like that movie.
What? Would you, if I hadn't said it was one that we mentioned, would you have gotten that? It sounded like you sounded pretty confident about that.
Yeah, as soon as you said Kenny Taylor, I was like, oh, I know.
See, which is funny because it's Kenny Tyler. So you recognized it by the wrong name.
Wait, this is it? You said NCAA? I thought Sixth Man was like the Boston Celtics.
Or something. No. They're in college. That's and then he helps his brother
win. Celtic Pride.
Oh.
Pride
Adam can't tell NBA movies apart because he's racist. He's gamesist.
So who's in the sixth man?
Sports Wayans, two of them.
Yeah, Keenan, not Keenan. Marlon Wayans and
Who's in Celtic Pride? Are you sure these aren't the same movie?
Celtic
Pride is Damon Wayans.
Jeff, who is in that movie?
The sixth man is
what's
Marlon,
on second.
Marlon Wayans. It's Marlon Wayans and the guy who was in
actually,
Vampire in Brooklyn.
Kadeem Hardison is not a Wayans at all. So no one knows what you're talking about. Shall we move on to the round of four? Or no, actually we're skipping round of four.
Yeah.
And we're going with this very dangerous round of two. Now for this one, we're not going to pick the first two words. We're going to pick what we deem the most important two words of the IMDb synopsis. Elliot, you're on deck. Hit it!
1970s rivalry.
1970s rivalry. Okay. 1970s rivalry. We don't know this part. 1970s rivalry. This could be one of two things. This could be showcasing a real rivalry from the history of sports, or this could be a movie that takes place in the 70s about two teams that have a rivalry, but aren't actual teams.
1970s rivalry.
1970s. Rivalry. And this, I'm just going to ask this, just, you don't have to answer it, but I want you to think about this so you can change your answer if this is true. That's a central part of the movie?
Central part.
Okay.
It's central to the movie.
It's essential to the movie. It's essential to the movie.
1970s rivalry.
The entire movie is about
this rivalry. It's about this 1970s rivalry between the Red Sox and the Yankees.
What big rivalries are
in the 70s between the Cowboys and everybody else, between the Raiders
and I'll give you all a clue, because this is important. It's you're thinking on the wrong line of sports.
On the wrong line of sports. 70. Oh, boxing. Boxing rivalry? Muhammad Ali? Ali? No. But boxing rivalry. Oh, wait. Hold on.
Yeah, think
was that? Hold on. I have a feeling that this is a very recent movie, and I have a feeling that it is the one with Robert De Niro and Sylvester Stallone, and it is called, what is that
Grudge
movie
Match.
Called?
Nope.
It's not Grudge Match?
Nope.
Okay. But it's a very recent movie, and it's about a rivalry in the 70s. Come on. We got this. Come on. 1970s rivalry. It's a recently made movie about a rivalry in sports in the 70s.
Wait, how do you know it's a recently made movie?
Rush!
Oh, nice.
Because I read his face when I said that. Well done, JC. JC spanking all of us. I want you to know this.
It is a great movie. And actually, it's a car movie, and it leads into a brief discussion
on Furious 7. Because I did tell Elliot we were going to talk about this, because, oh my God, Furious 7. Have
Don't
you, Adam?
Nope.
You haven't seen it, JC?
Yeah, I've seen it.
Adam, get the fuck out. No, I'm just kidding. Furious 7.
Make me a drink? I'll be right back, guys.
He's really leaving. He is actually leaving the room. All right, I'm still going to try not to spoil anything, but here's the thing about here's the thing about the Fast and the Furious movies. There's so much I can say without saying a goddamn thing about the movie.
I am the cavalry.
Because at this point, if you are not embracing what these movies are doing, you have missed the boat. You are not in that passenger seat. What?
There are movies that I don't like. And I fully admit that is my issue.
Mm-hmm.
So if you say, "Oh, I don't like Fast and Furious," that's something you have a problem with.
Yeah,
yeah.
That's not the same that the movie is objectively bad.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. And in fact, I was on Rage Select recently. Jeff and I played MLB 2015, the show. It was fun. We invented a new terrible snack idea called Stuffies, which is a hot dog with chili and cheese stuffed inside of it.
That sounds amazing.
Yeah, we called them Stuffies. We came up with slogans. But somebody in the comments, because I talked about Furious 7, was like, I don't understand why Transformers get shit on him and people like the Furious. Well, I'll tell you, random troll. It's because the Fast and the Furious movies have never broken their own rules.
Right.
Yes, they've broken the rules of science.
And time.
And time and physics. But they have always stuck to their guns.
Yeah.
And you know what Michael Bay can't do? Stick to his own goddamn script.
Well, the best thing I read about the difference, because that is a big sort of a sore point with, like, a bunch of Bay fans, and I'm a Bay fan, but the big difference is, and I read this in an article, I forgot where Bay I read hurt. It, is that the Transformers movies and Michael Bay's movies, they want you to feel dumb for watching them. Yeah. And the Fast Furious movies want you to know that this movie is dumb.
Well, yeah.
And so you can get along for the ride.
Yeah. The Furious movies, like, really, they nail heart down, which is kind of funny in an action film. And
Michael Bay's movies don't have any heart.
And I'm a Michael Bay fan, too, and he just doesn't do heart well at all. Like, the closest he comes is in Bad Boys 2 when Gabrielle Union gets kidnapped, and even then, that's just...
And then it's shit got real. Yeah. Go to the spinny shot, shit got real. That's the closest he can come to emotional resonance. Yeah,
to go to Cuba and blow shit up.
Yeah, the way Michael Bay makes a movie, and I appreciate it because, like, it's just all spectacle. It's like if somebody decorated a room and they just had everything was gold.
Yeah. Okay. Like, yeah.
Fast and Furious knows you have to use that technique when it's needed most.
Yeah.
I think that's dangerous ground because I think the Furious movies are also mostly spectacle, but I think it works because again, yes, they break the laws of physics, but they never break their own rules. And yeah, there's a lot more heart in a Furious movie because like we're family. Mm-hmm. You know what? Here's another thing, random Bay guy that I don't know why I have to break this to you. Find me a likable character in the last two Transformers movies. Spoiler alert, there isn't one.
Well, there's
not even Optimus Prime. By the way, Optimus Prime, who's supposed to be the hero of the movie, total douchebag. Stabs a guy in the back and then says, always with honor.
Bumblebee.
And then has
Bumblebee.
Rockets in his fucking shoes that it's like, did you have those the whole time? Do you know how many people died in Chicago? What? If you could have taken that battle to the air, you would have saved a lot of lives, you selfish piece of shit.
And Michaela's not bad.
Well, what about the guy with the statutory rape card in his wallet?
Yeah, exactly. A guy who literally has a card in his wallet, like, oh, this is the Romeo and Juliet law I carried around with me. I'm like, how many under 18 chicks are you boinking?
No.
You don't remember this? In the most recent Transformers.
When he has to explain to Mark Wahlberg why it's okay for him to date his daughter.
Even though she's under 18.
Oh my God, I tell you what happened. I had digitally erased that movie from my head.
So you're George Lucasing Michael Bay.
I'm not kidding. Like, when you said the last two, I was thinking three and two, not four.
Wow.
Oh,
see, this is how bad Bay is. Yeah. He likes Michael Bay, and he still repressed Transformers.
I swear to God, I didn't even think about that being a movie. Yeah. It just had left my mind.
But here's the unfortunate thing is, the Furious movies are never going to be validated until there's a Criterion release of a Furious
which we need to get on immediately.
It should be Fast 5. That's, like, Furious 7 is so good that it just barely edges out Fast 5 and how good it is.
I mean, come on. Like, how excited would you be? How excited would you be if... somehow, somebody at Criterion decided they really wanted to attain the rights to the entire Fast and Furious franchise.
Dude, I would get a chub.
Yeah.
I would get a chub you could downshift.
I would pay $400 for that box set.
I would sell my car.
I would buy it if it came inside a car. Like, you had to buy the car to get it. I would still buy it.
Here's the thing, though. The great thing about the Fast movies is, if you had a fan edit... they could go through and take out the dumb stuff, and you still have a good movie.
Yeah,
you would still have like just it's the theme of that entire franchise is family and loyalty.
Yeah,
everything serves that.
And you know what's great about it? And this is my longstanding. I just came up with this theory, but I think the reason they're hitting that so hard is because it's a subliminal message to the audience
to stay loyal to the.
Because the people that have stayed loyal to this franchise and waded through the shit of Tokyo Drift. It's pretty bad. Who waited through Too Fast, Too Furious, and Tokyo Drift are being rewarded with this completely bombastic, completely audacious, completely free-spirited and fun action romp that, again, even though it completely abandons the rules of nature, physics, and sometimes logic entirely, is still like, this is the world we live in. All these characters are likable. Even Tyrese, who started off in the franchise as, I'm sorry, like not likable at all, has built up into this comic relief character whose sole job it is now to remind the audience how crazy the crazy stunts we're seeing
are. You serious right now?
This is crazy. This takes crazy to another. It's like, Tyrese, we can see you. We can see what you're doing.
I tell you what, like, and we're going to move off the topic in a second, but one of the best things is Fast and the Furious did unintentionally what Avengers did.
Yeah.
Like, it introduced, like, their seminal characters and then brought them all together in the fifth one for the Avengers. And what we just saw is Avengers 2.
I mention it all the time, but I'm going to give him one more plug. Eric Davis over at Movies.com wrote this amazing article when the fifth one came out about how these are the Marvel movies for dude bros.
Yeah.
And that's totally right. But I, not being a dude bro, am really, really loving them. And James Wan, dude, I don't know why you'd be listening to this, but kudos to you because you took a very unenviable task, both with the death of Paul Walker and taking over for Justin Lin. Mm-hmm. Justin Lin? Justin Lin.
Justin Lin. Yeah.
I always want to say Jeremy Lin. That's a basketball player.
It's Justin Lin.
Justin Lin, who revamped that franchise and turned it into gold, and you had to take over for him, and you knocked it out of the fucking park. So congratulations!
Because like his use of camera angles in the beginning of that movie, was fucking awesome.
They're hauntingly beautiful.
And we mentioned Criterion. Like one of the things that it kind of occurred to me, and I mentioned in our review when we saw it at South By, that I appreciate about this franchise a lot is this franchise, as silly as it is, it does kind of take itself really seriously because. Unlike Star Wars and unlike Avengers, like you don't see, save for a few video games, there's no like Fast and Furious toys. There's no McDonald's promotion. Yeah. There's no like
that's really true.
I would pay some money for that shit.
There's like nothing cheesy about this franchise at all. Like,
and here's why that's surprising. In one weekend, Furious 7 made more money than the other three movies that were in theaters at that time combined.
Mm-hmm.
It made, what, $384 million?
It made a shit ton of money.
Worldwide,
shit ton of money.
But shit, even domestically, it was over $100 million.
Yeah, over $100 million.
Which is pretty insane for
an opening weekend, for an April release. April, because of, I've said this before, because of Fast and the Furious, April is the beginning of the summer season.
Yeah, it's the beginning of summer. Like, yeah. It's summer's pilot season. It's like, here's the shit, like, this is, Fast 7 is...
That's a good way to think about it.
It couldn't compete with Avengers... Like Age of Ultron, like it would compete, but it would cannibalize its own market.
Mm-hmm.
So this is like, look, we want to get this out of the way before the big hitters start coming up.
Yeah.
And like, I mean, from here we got Age of Ultron, which I can't fucking wait for.
Yeah. Oh man.
Tomorrowland's coming up.
I don't want to brag, but our press screening's in a couple weeks.
Yes. I formally serve you notice, sir, that I would like a seat and, if possible, a plus one.
I thought you were giving notice that you were quitting. I'm like, did you not hear what I just said? Don't quit yet, dude.
No, if
you quit, you don't get to go.
My ass has been there for fucking Hercules, and if I stay, and all that bullshit. I want to go to the fucking screen.
Okay.
If it's possible, I want a plus one.
Fair enough. They're definitely not giving us plus ones, but that's nice of you to say that. All right, so the round of two. Elliot, are you ready for yours?
Well, I already did mine.
You did yours. Yeah. I'm sorry, because that's how we got on that topic. You're right. Yeah. I'm sorry. JC, what you got?
Switch's talent.
Switch's talent.
Yeah.
Space Jam.
No.
Oh, come on. How is that not Space Jam?
Yeah.
Oh, fuck you. It's you're reading it wrong.
It's really not.
Do you not know the English word for Space Jam? Is that what it is? Because that's definitely fucking Space Jam.
I didn't realize how obvious Space Jam might be, but no, it's not Space Jam. Right here.
It's Space Jam. He's fucking lying.
No, it's not.
Okay, so a movie where two people switch athletic talent.
Oh, they switch athletic talent?
He switches talent with.
Oh, so
two humans.
Two humans switch talent.
Oh, like Mike.
No.
Damn it.
Fuck.
Rookie of the Year.
No. Switch to something supernatural.
Is it a shoulders movie?
It's like a teens movie.
Teen movie.
Switches talent. Mm. Who? What movie?
Teen movie switches talent?
Switches talent.
I'm like...
Teen Wolf.
No.
Shit.
It's a recent movie, and I'm pretty sure I'm the only one who saw it.
Okay.
Oh.
You're the only one who saw this recent... Oh my god, wait a minute. Is this the one with the guy from the Oklahoma City Thunder?
Yeah.
Oh!
It is called... Thunder... Lightning. Something strike. Lightning.
Thunderstruck.
Thunderstruck.
That's it. Thunderstruck!
Came up with it.
Yeah.
All right, half a point each for me and Adam.
You gotta cut in like 5 seconds from Thunderstruck there.
Yeah, because this show isn't long enough for it.
You know what's crazy? I just really thought about it. How it was only, 3 years ago when this Oklahoma City Thunder had three MVP candidates, I guess technically, on one team.
Yeah. I agree, but like, man, I don't know if James Harden would have developed the same way.
Like, yeah, he wouldn't have if he was all three there.
Wait, if the movie hadn't come out?
No.
Oh, okay. I was confused as to what we were talking about.
I mean, retrospective size, but didn't Kevin Durant got all butthurt about that the other day?
Wait, what, Thunderstruck?
No.
So
You the real butthurt.
Can we make that a thing on this show that anytime you don't know the question someone's actually asking, you just go, Thunderstruck?
Thunderstruck?
The other day,
a great movie.
So Bill Simmons has written a bunch of articles about the James Harden trade, about how it didn't need to happen when it happened, and things like that, and... This past Sunday, Oklahoma was playing Houston, and James Harden was torching.
Going off.
It was a good game, good battle between him and Westbrook, because they both went for 40 points. But Harden was just torching the Thunder, and the local newspaper brought up the trade, and so that made Bill Simmons kind of talk about and reference his articles and things like that. And in the middle of the game, because Kevin Durant's hurt, he tweeted at Bill Simmons, just let it go, man. Which I don't know if that's Kingdom Kevin Durant of just kind of isolation. Yeah, I don't know if that's and Kevin Durant just like kind of like just king. Depressed, going like, "Let it go, man." Like he's beating us.
I know Kevin Durant's a rich person. Like I just feel bad for I feel bad for him because like I feel like the NBA is starting to move on. Like I don't know if he's gonna get. Is he going to get his champion? Probably maybe once. He's going to be Kevin Garnett is what's going to happen. He's going to get one.
Man, in the NBA, the thing about that when that championship window is that window shuts quickly. Like, yeah. It's already over for the Clippers, I think. It's the only people that manage to keep opening that damn window is the Spurs.
Yeah, they will never close that window.
Teamwork. Whoever would have known that?
That's fucking
teamwork! That's how they open the window, because all 12 of them open up the window.
It's Kawhi Leonard being like, oh no. Actually, I'm going to shut down your best fucking player tonight.
Well, it's kind of funny because I was looking at, like, the history of the San Antonio Spurs. I was trying to get, a grasp on how long it's been since they haven't been successful.
Michael Jordan.
And they've, no, I mean, not championship, but just, like, not successful. Like, not making the playoffs. Ever since they drafted David Robinson back in 1989, 90, they missed the playoff only once. And that was the year when Robinson was out.
They did like the Indianapolis Colts did. Like, Robinson got hurt. They sucked for 1 year, and then they got the greatest power forward of all time.
That's a great analogy.
There was like a year where it was like the Twin Towers. It was like, how the fuck do you play against this?
Yeah. Meanwhile, all the perennially bad teams like the Mavericks at the time were just like, well, what the fuck?
Yeah.
Just like the Browns. They're like, Andrew Luck, really?
It's called do your draft homework, motherfucker. Kevin Costner don't really run your team.
Did you guys hear that the Browns are really considering trying to trade their two first-round picks that they have to try to get up and go for Mariota?
So they can ruin his career, too?
What the shit is wrong?
They don't learn. They do not learn.
Look, once you drafted Manziel...
They're like Damon Lindelof. They just don't learn.
At least for a few years. Like, you drafted him.
Yeah.
Come on!
Yeah.
All right. Well, back to the game. Adam.
He did what he could. He's in rehab.
Your round of
He's
two.
Okay. This is going to be really hard to find the two most, I guess, the two most important words.
Hit me.
So just give us the title.
Head banger.
Right. Which is actually two words.
Oh, at least we know it's a two word title.
I think what I'd. Okay.
Fight Club.
Warrior.
Is that actually a sports movie?
Just fucking read your thing.
Hold on. Okay. Texas coach.
Oh, Friday Night Lights?
Those two words.
Fucking amazing guess.
That is.
Two words. Texas coach.
Unnecessary.
Reference.
The Express.
Matthew McConaughey movie.
Longest Yard.
We Are Marshall.
That's three words. You keep picking the three word title.
Oh, it's a two word?
Yeah, it's a two word title. He let that slip.
Okay.
Texas. Like, short of actually giving you the.
Oh, Glory Road.
No.
That's basketball. We don't know it's football. I assumed that, but we don't know it's football.
Yeah, could have been Glory Road.
Yeah. No, you're right. I'm sorry, Elliot. I assumed it was football, but I could be wrong.
You're probably gonna give me shit for picking the wrong words, but there's no other, like, short of giving you the characters' names or the team name.
Hold on. Texas coach. Mm. Texas coach may not be football. Texas coach. Texas coach. It may not be football.
Brian's a cheerleader now.
Sis boom ba. Is it sis boom ba? Mm. No. It's three words.
Texas coach.
I'll give you. I don't think there's
the Express.
No, The movie's not so much about the coach, so much as it is about the environment.
It sounds like a civil rights movie or something.
It does kind of sound like.
It's not from the Titans. That's Virginia.
Think to some degree, maybe some level of oppressionness.
Okay, some level is not civil rights.
Okay, so is more than likely a black coach.
I'm thinking maybe like a gay rights movie, maybe like a
I don't think I've ever seen.
Fuck this, we're moving on.
No, I want to know. This is fun.
God, man, it's right in front of me, and I just can't fucking see it.
Texas coach,
level of oppression.
Oh, is it the one? There was a movie about Hispanic runners that is about to come out.
Oh, that was a McFarlane USA?
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's not it.
Damn it. Okay,
I got nothing.
It's really obvious. It's actually really, like, you'll hear the movie and then you're like, whoa, that fucking movie?
What is it?
Yeah, Varsity Blues.
Oh, fuck me.
Guys! It's like, honestly, it's like when you said Friday
Oppression
Night Lights.
Oppression isn't
like,
race, it's that he's an oppressive coach. Fuck. Fuck.
You should have said
fuck us all.
Cream or something.
Well, listen up, listener.
Had it actually been there in the description.
I know.
Listeners, don't worry. Next time will be better. So here's mine. I'm going to make mine a little bit
easier. Hold on. There is a little bit of a segue into that.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That actually, the Texas has a new Texas basketball has a new coach.
They do. They fired...
Rick Barnes is finally gone.
Got fired, and they got the coach from Shaka... What's his name? Shaka Smart. Smart from VCU.
Yep.
Took his team. By the way, Virginia Commonwealth, you may be like, that's who's ever heard of them? They went to the Final Four twice.
Yeah, they did it four years ago.
Yeah.
Twice! Amazing.
And their current coach is what, Barnes or something?
Rick Barnes.
Was Rick Barnes.
Who is now actually the coach of Tennessee.
He got a new job quick.
He's better suited to, like, developing a program, but he can't take it to the promised land.
He wanted to keep roughly the same color scheme, so he went to Tennessee.
I got these fucking shirts.
Man. I bought all these fucking...
Actually, it's kind of all these ties. Same color scheme and the exact same symbol.
Yep. Like, I bought all these ties. I'm going to scratch the U out. All right, so here's my round of two. Struggling Trucker.
Over the Top.
That's correct!
Come on, it was a wrestling movie.
No, it's an arm wrestling movie.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that is I Am Debo, a game that we will probably play a lot, and we worked in the sports headlines as we played. Don't you love it? So with that in mind, it's time to step in the ring and pay another visit to our corner man.
Let's get ready to rumble!
This guy is a wrecking machine.
And Vincent Smith joining us yet again from the corner, our corner man, to talk about the latest UFC fights and the latest UFC drama. Vince, how you doing, sir?
Yes, I have resurrected. I know it's been a while. I would have been back sooner, but that Jesus guy was holding up the queue like a dick.
And... I just like that you're auto-tuned now.
Yeah,
I
know. the people at home are going to be able to hear it because we actually edit this pretty well. But Vince to us in the room right now sounds like T-Pain.
Yeah, I don't know whether or not you got that recorded or not, but it was auto-tuned. I swear I heard Flute Dick.
Does Flute Dick go along with beef nuggets? Is that my new handle?
Yes.
Yes.
That's what a beef nugget hangs underneath is a flute.
We're going to have an official inside the locker dish. We're just going to send it.
Flute dicks and flute beef nuggets. Just like Scotland used to make.
Speaking of the UK, I think one of the first big pieces of news actually wasn't a fight that already happened, but one that's coming up is... Conor McGregor versus Jose Aldo for the featherweight belt. And there's kind of two different sides to this, almost completely different discussions. It's just kind of the animosity between the two, like the psychological game that Conor McGregor's playing. And then, of course, there's the technical aspect of how their styles match up. So from the footage I sent you guys, what did you think so far?
Man, it's okay. Here's the thing, Vince. I've started watching wrestling again because we do commentaries and stuff for this show. And I just can't, because I'm in that mindset when I watch these, it was at a press conference, you know, and Dana White got involved and they were kind of breaking him up. They're about to start scuffling. I don't know how much of that is real and how much of that is put on.
That's what I was getting at too. Is like, it looks to some degree, and especially with, I guess with Dana White's demeanor, it seemed like a little bit of theatrics. So I don't know I wouldn't say necessarily that it's planned. I'm not saying there's necessarily...
But maybe they're playing it up.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, they probably do have some kind of animosity towards each other, but they probably still want to get people interested in the fight. So, you know, you make it look like you fucking hate each other, and you want to see Conor McGregor get the shit kicked out of him.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Well, it's funny because I think that not a whole ton of people want to see Conor McGregor get the shit kicked out of him. It's really interesting, and there's a reason why I actually... don't think that at least the lion's share of the animosity is faked, is because, one, it's pretty much always coming from Conor McGregor kind of taunting him and being like, yeah, no, I'm going to destroy you in front of your hometown and all this sort of stuff. And funny thing, for people who aren't as familiar with the sport, there is almost a patriotism or national pride with Brazilian fighters that is unequaled with just about any other sport.
Even like the Philippines and Pacquiao?
Well, no, it seems like maybe Brazilians and soccer. It's like Brazilians and soccer and you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's something that they have, like, I mean, my guess is Brazilian jiu-jitsu or something?
Yeah, yeah.
So that's like, it is like kind of like their national, it's like what they hold on to. It's like mm-hmm. what they're yeah. known for.
Okay. And well, okay. plus, I mean, the question about like the animosity between fighters, like one thing I've noticed most about UFC fighters is how much they respect each other, even after one of them beats the other. Like after Ronda Rousey beat Kat Zingano 14 seconds, like she's on the mat, like on her knees saying, "Hey, do you want a rematch? You got it." And they're just shaking hands. The times that I have seen animosity between fighters, it seems really real because for the most part, these guys like really respect each other because it's such a dangerous sport.
And I do think that as much as Conor McGregor, I think his personality very much is that like, no, I know that I'm better than this guy, or at least he thinks he is, to the point where it's like, yeah, I'm going to say whatever I want to you because one, I think that, and two, clearly you're getting pissed off and he's going to try and throw him off his game. It's not the first time that a fighter's done it. I mean, you can go all the way back to Muhammad Ali, or at least in more recent years, guys like Tito Ortiz, for example, and it's the classic psychological ploy.
It's the Clubber Lang.
Yeah, exactly. For Brocky 3.
Yeah, exactly.
I want to eat his children!
Oh, that. No, that was actually Mike Tyson. That was real life.
Damn it.
I know we get confused sometimes, but that was real life.
The only difference with Conor McGregor is that when he eats Jose Aldo's children, he's going to wrap them in sheep intestines first.
With a side of Chianti.
Hey, I don't mean to interrupt you, Vince, but we just got a breaking news story here. It looks like the Pittsburgh Steelers have announced that Troy Polamalu is retiring.
Yeah.
After 12 years in the NFL, an outstanding career.
Good run.
Wow, that kind of, I'm kind of surprised by that. But
12 years strong safety of this generation.
We will definitely talk more about that later, but I just wanted to throw that out there. Vince, back to you, sir.
Okie dokie. Well, kind of going from the personality clash, I'd definitely like to talk a lot about the kind of technical difference between the two. And I think a lot has been made of the fact that Conor McGregor fought his way all the way to a title shot without fighting a single wrestler once. And that's kind of been the criticism leveled at him, is that he kind of got what a lot of people consider to be hand-picked opponents for his style. I know that a couple of different people like Jack Slack and Lawrence Kenshin, who do technical breakdowns of striking, have thought that though Conor McGregor has a very wide stance that allows him to move in and out very karate style, throw a lot of odd kicks, the fact that he does have that wide stance leaves him very open to the kind of like chopping leg kicks that Jose Aldo can throw. I mean, like, for those of you who want a little bit of extra fight homework, go watch Jose Aldo versus Uriah Faber. Either of those fights, Faber was essentially fighting on one leg by the end of the fight. It was actually kind of hard to watch, the kind of leg kicks. I remember Randy Couture used to say that a lot of judges will say, like, oh, yeah, we don't score leg kicks as much as punches because they don't damage. Actually, if you get a guy who knows what he's doing, it's like getting hit in the thigh with a baseball bat repeatedly. And Jose Aldo epitomizes that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, even I hear even boxers talk about it, that the majority of your power, and if I'm not like, I've never seen Conor McGregor fight, but the way I see highlights of him is like, he looks like he's pretty much a puncher, like a puncher and a kicker, I guess, he's a striker for the most part, right?
Yeah.
Not much of a wrestler type. So and boxers talk about this a lot, is the majority of your strength, the majority of your power comes from your legs and your hips, you know? So if you've got somebody who's just basically tearing your legs apart, the power in your arms,
yeah,
your fists, no matter how hard your fist actually is, and it
you
could
can't
be really hard
off of anything.
Yeah, exactly, like you're not pushing off of anything, so it's just arm punches,
you're just like swinging, just,
right? Exactly.
And I do think that one of Conor McGregor's biggest weapons, like Brian and I watched his fight with Dustin Poirier, and the victory was especially impressive because it didn't look like he didn't like catch him on the button with anything. He just like he landed what you would consider from any other fighter to be like a fairly glancing blow. Like I think he caught him with a hook behind the ear, and that was the beginning of the end. But Conor McGregor has deceptive power at 145, but if Jose Aldo is able to pick apart his legs like that, then that's going to be a big question of whether or not he can take advantage of the really great footwork and angling and create the kind of power in his punches and his kicks that he normally has. So I just really hope, like, Conor McGregor is a very talented fighter. I'm very interested to see this match, but I really hope that, like, really, if you're going to take any fighter at all lightly, you're gonna do it with Jose Aldo? Really, dude? Like, probably a bad idea.
No, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Hey, Vince, I want to talk about this Carla Esparza and Joanna. How do you pronounce her last name?
Oh my gosh.
Say it again?
Jedrzejczyk. If you see it on there, it's another one of those examples of, like, Europe bought all the consonants.
It's the Crazy Zuski.
Crazy Zuski, yeah.
Of UFC.
Mike Crazy Zuski.
Antetokounmpo.
Yeah, yep, true story.
But she is absolutely, like, I kind of watched her striking, and I'm like, I think I'm a little bit in love. I'm not entirely sure, but, like...
I'd be terrified. Yes. You're in love? I'm terrified.
Did you see her punch?
It's just, it's very rare that you see someone, like, I can't say that I've ever seen a striker as crisp and measured as she is, especially not a female striker. Like, you think of, like, Christiane Cyborg at 145, and she is a fierce kickboxer, but there's something about the way that Joanna throws her shots that is very, like, she doesn't wind up. There isn't that feeling that, like, you almost feel as though she's biting down on her mouthpiece and just throwing as hard as she can. There's this economy of motion. Like, the entire fight, she was outclassing Esparza on the feet and, you know, not having any of her takedown. But at the same time, she's like, I'm not going to rush in. I'm just going to pick you apart. And then the combination with which she ended the fight was... I can't think to call it anything else other than beautiful. I mean, just, like, very measured, very, like, picture-perfect technique. Like, admittedly, I'm less educated on the strawweight women fighters as I am with any of the other weight divisions.
Yeah, what is strawweight exactly, Vince? Can you explain that?
That's the 115-pound women's division. They only just introduced it. The most recent, I believe, most recent season of The Ultimate Fighter actually had, I believe, 16 of the top-ranked women fighters from Invicta Fighting Championship, which I believe is an all-women's MMA company that's owned by Zuffa, the same people who own UFC. And at the end of that season, they actually crowned the first ever 115-pound champion. So Carla Esparza earned that belt. She was very impressive. Her takedowns, her control on the ground, and her submissions are all very, very good. So with Jedrzejczyk coming over and just kind of being a relative unknown, at least to MMA fans, it was just kind of like, okay, she's clearly talented, but Esparza is no joke. And yet, when you watch this fight, I mean, like, I won't go on too much about it. I kind of want to hear what you guys thought about it after seeing it.
My favorite moment was, I'm not even going to try and say her last name, when Joanna had a great round. But this is a great indicator of how great a fight this was. She had a great round, and she went to do the thing where they climb up on top of the cage and, like, rile up the crowd. She couldn't lift herself up on top. Like, she reached out. You could tell she tried to hoist herself up, and it was just, like, this realization of, oh, no, I'm way too tired to do that. And it was just, like, and that to me was what was so great about this fight is, like, they were just not good. Like, even when Esparza was running from her, like, she would come back, and it got to a point where, like, I couldn't really tell who was going to win this match. They kept going back and forth.
Yeah. The thing that I honestly, it was the thing you kind of talked about just in different words, but I guess it was her patience. Mm-hmm. Like, it's very common you see when you look like you've got somebody in trouble, like, you just start wailing on, like, mm-hmm. your first instinct is to, I'm going to let it all go mm-hmm. and just hope something really big lands. Like, you just get too excited, you're too much in the moment, and you feel like you've got somebody on the ropes. It takes a good amount of, I guess,
Maturity.
That's the best way to put it. I guess maturity and comfortability in the ring to know that, you know, she's hurt. I think I've got her where I want her, but I've got her where I want her and exactly how I want her.
Yeah.
And let me just, you know, I'm going to stay focused, stay calm, and just pick my shots. And that was actually really impressive. It's usually pretty impressive for me to see fighters not give in to just natural instinct to just start wailing on somebody and just tire yourself out and then get knocked the fuck out. Yep. You know, that kind of thing. So
that does happen a lot. In fact, that's something that a lot of trainers do talk about, is telling their fighters when you have them hurt, of course you want to jump on the opportunity. But like you say, there's pretty much, I almost feel like it should be some of that, like, old-timey stock army training footage to show new fighters, just like with the old-timey, well, you fighters want to go in and rush in when you hurt your opponents, eh? Well, look what happened to Pete Drago Cell, because he fought Scott Smith and hurt him really badly with a body shot and pretty much sprinted directly at him with his hands down. And Scott Smith, known as Hands of Steel, caught him right on the jaw coming in and dropped him, technically won the fight, and then collapsed to the floor holding his rib, because he was genuinely hurt, but it was almost like a simultaneous knockout. It was really crazy and kind of one of those tales just to kind of take home and be like, okay, I don't want to have that happen to me.
Yeah. Hey, moving on to the Anthony Pettis and Rafael Dos Anjos?
Dos Anjos.
Yeah, that fight was kind of the exact opposite, and we talked about the comfortability in the ring and the patience of the two female fighters. These guys both came out so frantic, like just so, like every kick and every punch was so fast. I thought I was watching the Raid 2 or the Raid 3, I guess.
It was pretty nuts. I mean, it was especially impressive. One, because the first, I've been watching Dos Anjos ever since his first fight in the UFC against Jeremy Stevens, where Stevens effectively knocked him out with a Shoryuken. Like, his fist came right from the floor. If you were, like, for, you know, other Canadians listening, if you were in Saskatchewan, you could see it coming for days. But, like, it was just this huge punch, and he was the last person who I would have thought would have been fighting Anthony Pettis for the championship. And not only that, but Joe Rogan put it perfectly when he said he didn't just beat him, he beat the brakes off of Anthony Pettis that fight.
He beat the brakes off of him?
Yeah, he had the perfect game plan. I don't know, did you guys record with us after the Gilbert Melendez-Anthony Pettis fight back in December?
I think that may have been just you and me.
Yeah, I think that was just two of you.
Well, the one thing that I commented on, even though Melendez ended up getting caught with a guillotine in the second round, was that up until that point, he was playing a very intelligent game. Anthony is called Showtime for a reason, and when you give him room to open up with those flashy kicks, give him room to use his footwork, set up those great combinations, he's probably one of the most dangerous guys in the sport, really. Just any single tiny opening he can capitalize on. But if you stifle him, then it becomes very difficult. It's almost kind of the same thing that I'm wondering about Conor McGregor, because he hasn't faced any wrestlers. What happens when he faces a guy like Chad Mendes, who can just, like, hold him up against the cage and just, like, rabbit punch him for three rounds and wear him out? What happens when he can't throw those crazy kicks? And going back to the Dos Anjos versus Pettis fight, that's exactly what he did. One of the common comments that a lot of people were having was the insane conditioning that Dos Anjos had to have for that fight. Because not only did he stifle Pettis, did he not give him any room to, like, get off any of his shots, but he did it for five rounds. He was in his face, throwing kicks, throwing punches, taking him down, doing it all over again. Pettis didn't get a chance to start off that fight, and that was probably the most impressive thing about it.
Absolutely. And again, like, those guys hung in there the whole fight to the point that it felt like, you know what it felt like? That scene in They Live when Roddy Piper
and Keith David
are just like, just going, it's like, at it. It's, you're like, are either of you going to stop or you're just going to wait till you're both dead? That's what it felt like, man. Neither one of them would relent. It was bloody. It was sadistic after a while. It was just like, oh my God, just stop. Somebody just stop.
No, just keep going. That's how those movies go.
Stop, stop. He's already dead.
Yeah, that was a really great fight. Roy Nelson is a guy we've talked about before, Vince.
Yes, indeed. He is one of those kind of guys who breaks the mold, mostly because you have to get those custom made for a guy who looks like him. But yeah, he is not someone to, wow, as the fat puns come continuously, he is not someone to be taken lightly in the heavyweight division. But But he continues to push forward with that crazy wrecking ball right hand and that insane chin that he has. He
came in like a wrecking ball. I'm glad I wasn't the only one.
Sorry, just, I had to.
That's fine.
I deserved that.
You don't deserve
You set
that.
It up. Nobody. No, but you know what? If he sets me up, he knows what's going to happen.
Yeah. To be fair, nobody deserves Miley Cyrus.
That's true. Nobody does. Deserves. Nobody
Except
does.
For Liam Hemsworth. He deserves it.
All right.
But speaking of great setups, I think that this was probably the most impressive performance from his opponent, Alistair Overeem, when he fought him at UFC 185, I believe.
Can I ask you a question, Vince? Can I ask you a question? How is Alistair Overeem not a character from Harry Potter? How is that not somebody who is like a potions teacher in like the third year? Because that sounds like the most J.K. Rowling name I've ever heard.
It's true. And I'm, you know, kind of amused at the idea of him with like the little Harry Potter spectacles perched upon his nose. Just this towering monolith in like the Hogwarts robes among all these like skinny little English kids.
Totally.
Actually, the way I don't know the guy's name. I don't know the guy's name, but the way you're pronouncing it makes it sound like a prenatal spell. Like the Alistair Overeem.
Overeem.
Oh, okay.
Not Overeem.
I keep hearing Overeem too.
No, not Overeem. Although that's funny too.
That is.
But Overeem, he's had kind of a mixed run in the UFC, which is really unfortunate because before he arrived in the organization, he is probably one of the most renowned, like, pure kickboxers. He's a K-1 level world champion. He's probably got some of the best kicks and knees of any heavyweight and has the best ways of setting them up. Most of the time you see heavyweights who are very plodding, who just like, you have guys like, even the guys who are like ripped like Junior Dos Santos, they just sling and sling and sling. Whereas Overeem has some of the best technical striking in that division. He's also an Abu Dhabi world champion, which is the one of the preeminent grappling contests. So he has a very underrated ground game, but for several reasons, he's had a really rough time in the UFC. Several times it's been noted that when he gets ahead, he tends to leave his hands down. When he fought Travis Brown, he got caught right in the face with a front kick when he had Brown hurt still. He's had that happen a few times. When he fought Ben Rothwell, it's arguable that happened. But for this fight, I think he's made a very intelligent decision. He's changed up his camp and he's gone to Greg Jackson and Mike Winklejohn's camp in Albuquerque, New Mexico, who are best known for, that's John Jones's camp. That's also, George St. Pierre went there after his first loss to Matt Serra, and completely revamped his game. And Greg Jackson is just known as a tactician of just the mental game, and Winklejohn is known as one of the preeminent striking coaches as well. So it seems to have really upped his game in terms of allowing him to make the best use of his gifts that he has, namely those scary knees and leg and body kicks that he landed the entire fight.
Well, I got to give it up to Roy Nelson, because you look at these two in the ring and it seems like Roy is clearly outmatched, and you know, just from the start of it. And then, you know, and Roy's bleeding, there's blood in the beard, which I think should be the name of some kind of Bob Seger album or something. But yeah, so he's bleeding. He's obviously, like, there's a minute left to go in the whole thing. And at the very last second, he connects right to the temple and then goes after him in a way that I was like, I literally out loud just went, holy shit! Because I started thinking, oh my gosh, now I'm not entirely sure who's going to win this fight.
That's the thing with Roy Nelson, is just as much as you hurt him and hurt him and hurt him, he's got a granite chin, and one punch can change the outcome of the fight, which is, it's kind of interesting, because I had almost the opposite reaction. Like, I still went, oh shit, but I was, like, so impressed with Overeem's, like, performance that entire fight, that I'm just like Han Solo in Star Wars being like, that's great, kid, don't get cocky, and all of a sudden, Nelson cracks in, and I'm like, oh no, 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 don't let this happen again. And he managed to get back up and win it. And it was still just an incredible performance. And I think that if he can kind of discipline himself to not, like, be the hare and the tortoise and the hare and get kind of slack-jawed a little bit once he pulls out ahead, then he could be a real threat in the heavyweight division. Did you guys happen to see the post-fight interview that he had with Joe Rogan?
No.
It's kind of the prototype of what his personality is like, because, like, Joe asked him about, like, you know, Nelson clocked you pretty hard in the third round. Did you kind of feel in trouble? And he's just like, oh, no, man, I get hit harder than that in training all the time. And it's like, the fuck you do?
Governments change, the lies stay the same. Hey, Vince, before you go, I know you were wanting to talk about, I don't think any of us got a chance to see it, but I know you were wanting to talk about the Jorge Masvidal and...
Al Iaquinta.
Iaquinta, yeah. Tell us about that fight.
It was just one of those really kind of, like, you know, it was, I think it was the co-main event, or, like, the, whatever you would call the, like, third fight before the main event, but it was very interesting, because it's two guys who aren't especially large names. Al Iaquinta is a former, is an Ultimate Fighter winner, and Jorge Masvidal is a guy who, despite being fairly young, he's only 30 years old, has been in fighting since he was 18, so he has a 28-8 record, and he is just a guy who is a grizzled veteran. He has excellent striking. He's pretty much just an all-around great fighter, but he's one of those examples of a guy who just, like, you ask a casual MMA fan who he is, and he's not a St. Pierre, he's not a Frankie Edgar or a John Jones, people don't really know him, but in this fight, he really kind of demonstrated how he managed to just use all of those skills. He just is one of those guys who none of his striking feels forced or labored. He's very loose, very smooth, he has excellent footwork and head movement, and managed for most of the fight to pick apart Al Iaquinta, gave him a really nasty gash under one of his eyes with an elbow. But come the second and third rounds, Iaquinta managed to kind of rally a little bit and land enough significant strikes that he actually ended up winning a split decision, despite being really bloodied up and having a really rough first round. And the people who I think the show was in Fairfax, Virginia, they were not happy. And unlike, you know, a lot of fighters who will kind of go like, okay, yeah, that sucks, they're booing me. But he's getting interviewed by, one of the commentators after the fight, and the crowd starts booing, and Al Iaquinta is a guy from he's a New Yorker. He's from, like, Long Island, so he's got a little bit of the temper and he's got the accent. And he hears the boos and he's like, "Oh, you better not fucking be booing me. I fought my fucking ass off," or at least that's what I thought, because they put a 7-second delay on him. And for about 5 seconds, it was just silence with, like, expletives. So I just thought that was kind of amazing.
Yeah, that's the 7-second delay is really necessary in that instance, I think. Well, Vince, dude, another crop of great fights, and obviously one to look forward with Aldo and McGregor. Before we go out, is there anything else you want to drop on us?
Not at the moment, but definitely looking forward to talking to you guys again, because we have a ton of great fights coming up in the next few months.
Fantastic. Thanks so much, Vince. We appreciate your time. Hey, did you guys hear about Mike Trout, by the way? First game of the season. First at-bat of the regular MLB season, which, by the way, has officially begun.
Yay!
Go Cubs. I guess. Sure. Go Cubs. Why not?
They're 1-1.
Just
on the floor. In number one.
Somebody was bragging after the, I was on Rage Select again. I'm plugging it again. Jeff was like, "What's a team that sucks?" And I was like, "The Houston Astros." And somebody in their comments was like, excuse me, they're undefeated. And I'm like, that's adorable. They're 1-0.
Not after today.
And there you go. Oh, your dream has died again. So Mike Trout gets up to the plate. First at bat, again, I want to stress this, of the season, and hits a home run.
Yep.
There is no more auspicious way to begin a season than your first at bat being a home run. And that got me thinking, as it tends to do, a dangerous pastime, I know, about directors whose first films were so great that you couldn't help but use the analogy of hitting a home run at their first at bat. So I just wanted to know if you guys had any examples of directors whose first film was so fucking good, you were just like, wow, wow, that's impressive. Yellet, you want to start?
I can start with a guy who was on the cover of Newsweek as the next Spielberg.
Oh my God, yeah, he was.
That was a cover that existed. That was a real movie. That was a movie fact.
That is true.
It is M. Night Shyamalan when he came up with Unbreakable.
Look, M. Night Shyamalan has descended into being a completely talentless hack. However, we would be remiss. We would be remiss if we did not honor his first couple movies.
Yeah.
And especially Sixth Sense.
Yeah.
Right out of the gate with Sixth Sense, it was like, I can understand how the people at Newsweek wrote that article.
Yeah.
Because that is such an impressive film right out of the gate that immediately we wanted to see more. And I got to say, Sixth Sense is his best.
I think Signs is his best.
I think Unbreakable is his best. I still honestly
like Unbreakable. You know, it's really kind of funny you guys all say that because, like, people, it really actually isn't a legitimate argument. You know, Sixth Sense is the most famous one. Yeah. It's honestly, it's going to be the most famous one forever.
Yeah, and I honestly think it's his most, maybe not even his most, but I. First of all, Elliot, that's a great choice because Sixth Sense, like, we can only argue about its place as one or two in his you know, catalog.
He goes down so fast.
Fast after Signs, really.
I can defend Lady in the Water because, like, I like the underlying story.
You can try to defend it.
Yeah, it's a lot like Mike Trout's the rest of his game because he hit a home run his first at-bat, struck out the next three times.
Yeah, absolutely. It's even better analogy than you playing. Yeah.
Which put evil me, Ricky Bobby.
But Sixth Sense, that is a like just a legitimately objectively great film. So yeah. That's a good choice. What about you, JC?
Going with only because the season premiere of Veep is coming out this Sunday, Armando Iannucci, who directed In the Loop.
Hilarious movie.
Yeah, to say it was the first time, I mean, it's kind of cheating because he's had a long career before that and he had a show really similar to In the Loop in the UK.
You're totally cheating
with the doctor, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, if you want to think about it, that's basically, you know, you're playing in the minors. You know, right. You're successful in the minors.
Good. Right. See, I like the way you do this.
The cool thing about In the Loop and Veep both kind of follow the same kind of formula, a la The Office, where it's a camera following people around and their political day to day. It's just a funny show, and it gives you a really good glimpse into how politics happens, even though it's really kind of absurdist comedy.
True.
And if you are as politically inept in all things as I am, I don't know shit about politics, but I could follow this show, and I could follow that movie. Both incredibly hilarious. I rewatch In the Loop all the time, and if you've heard me on any of the shows on One of Us, you know that I place a lot of value on the comedies that I can rewatch.
It's difficult. That's difficult. Lemon difficult.
I tell you, in terms of reviewing movies, I don't think rewatch value gets enough weight. Because, I mean, you can have a great movie. Like, I love the movie The Departed. Haven't seen the movie since I saw it.
Dude, it's still good.
I know it's good.
But I know what you mean. Rewatch value is... It's like Super Mario Brothers 3. Why is it one of the best video games ever made?
Because
I don't care how better they get, how much better the graphics get, how much more story they get. I go back and play Super Mario Brothers 3 all the fucking time.
Yeah, exactly.
And there's like different layers of rewatchability, too. Like, there's rewatchability, as in if it's on TNT or HBO, like if it's chosen for me, I'll rewatch it.
Yeah.
And there's movies that you literally will rewatch, like you will pick it. Yeah. To rewatch it.
No, yeah. It's the same reason why that Shawshank Redemption should have beat Forrest Gump. Because, like, that's a movie that I can sit out at any time Shawshank Redemption is on.
Oh, that's even this. That was the same year, I want to say, as Pulp Fiction.
Oh, my God, you're right.
There was actually, like, some amazing movies that came out there. Oh, I made the thing of Dances with Wolves. Honestly, I can't remember.
They should be able to, you know, if the Oscars were a real metric for talent and for excellence in filmmaking, and not just Weinstein just buying whatever the fuck he wanted to buy that day. Like, you could have, you know what, this is just a year where shit was so good, we gotta give two.
I really thought you were gonna stop with if the Oscars were a real thing and not just imaginary.
No, it's kind of funny because, like, Forrest Gump meets the criteria of it's a movie that I'll watch if it's on TNT kind of thing, like if it's chosen for me, but Shawshank Redemption is a movie I will pick off the shelf.
Oh, yeah.
I will choose to rewatch it.
Totally. You know? So what's your pick, Adam?
Mine is kind of it's an instance where the filmmaker never went on to make anything else.
So a walk off.
It's not only is it a walk off. Not only is it a walk off, but from the time that it was released, you could almost consider it that it was initially called a foul ball before he actually hit a home run.
Wow.
Yeah.
But upon replay,
it was actually a home run. And it was Charles Laughton with Night of the Hunter.
If you haven't seen Night of the Hunter, guys, it is a brilliant film. Robert Mitchum, one of my favorite actors, in his darkest role. Yeah, I know he was in Cape Fear and he played Max Cady. This is darker.
This is
so much darker.
Yeah, I mean, talk about, take that, a character like that, and he is like literally targeting kids.
And you know? Set that movie, that movie was made in the 50s.
Yeah, made in the 50s.
That movie is that dark.
It's made in the 50s, set in the South, and it's like it's a gothic noir movie in the 1950s. Like,
so good.
There's so many elements to it that are ahead of its time that, again, like, it's initially like they called it a foul ball. Like, critics didn't know what to think of it. Audiences didn't know what to think of it.
I don't know. Like, you say in 50s in the South, I got very afraid all of a sudden.
So no. It has nothing to do with race.
No, but at all. But still, you should be. Like,
but you should be afraid of Robert Mitchum.
You should be fucking terrified of Robert Mitchum.
Yeah.
But,
but the movie's aged like a good scotch. Like, it... Oh.
That's a great way to put it.
Oh my God.
As far as building a Criterion Collection, how high on the list would that be? As far as... Like, if you don't have any Criterions at all, and somebody's like, I want to do this...
It's no less than top five.
It's number two.
For me, well, I mean, I guess I'm a little biased. My number one is City Lights.
Okay.
And my number two would probably be Seven Samurai.
That's exactly my top two.
Hey, look at us. Yeah, we should date. We should date. For me, I gotta go with my man, Michael Mann, in fact. His first feature film was a little movie called Thief. You may have heard us talking about it over on Junk Food Cinema every Tuesday, filmschoolrejects.com. And it is a movie where James Caan plays a professional safecracker who gets in with the mob. It's this excellent, gritty crime saga with a score by Tangerine Dream, amazing cinematography, wonderful performance from James Caan, from Robert Prosky, and even James Belushi, yeah. It's a really great movie. Highly, highly, highly recommend it. And that movie, I mean, Michael Mann went on to make a lot of really great movies after that. Mm-hmm. And then a lot of not so great movies recently. But that film, to me, remains one of the pinnacles of hitting a home run your first at bat.
And you can see the way that movie influenced
that's four.
A lot of
is that your criteria number four?
That is, yeah. Sorry.
Okay. You can see the way that movie influenced damn near a lot of movies after that.
Like, no, absolutely it did. And my number five would be Ace in the Hole.
Great movie.
I know, right? So yeah, that's a great little mini discussion on directors that hit a home run their first at bat with their first film, and that is how we are going to walk off of this episode. Yeah.
Before we do that, I want a quick shout out to Chaos Bulldog.
Yes, we mentioned Chaos Bulldog earlier in the show, and then JC happened to be running through Facebook and saw something kind of troubling, so we wanted to throw a shout out.
Yeah, if you listen to the show, sometimes you know that I don't pay attention, and the reason why is because sometimes I'm scrolling through Facebook while we're recording.
Really great for keeping the show moving. Thanks for that, JC.
As I look at Facebook too, I'm like, you just have no day.
But in this case, it paid off.
I don't do it a lot. But yeah, I did notice that Chaos Bulldog is in the hospital with an appendicitis, so we want to wish her a quick recovery. And
get well, Chaos.
Yeah, get well so somebody can come on and talk about hockey.
Yeah, seriously, like if we lose you, we've lost our entire female audience. So please just hang in there, speedy recovery. We're all pulling for you. Thank you for mentioning that, JC. Well, we're going to go ahead and end the show. I want to remind you yet again, you can find us on iTunes as well as on Stitcher. You can also follow us on Twitter at ITLcast. You can also follow the website at OneOfUsNet and like the website on Facebook, facebook.com/OneOfUsNet. Or you can follow us individually on Twitter. I'm at BriGuySalisbury.
At ITL Elliot.
At JCDeLeon1.
At the_beef.
And of course, do consider becoming a subscriber if you haven't already. And get your free audiobook if you haven't already. It's free! What are you waiting for? Click the link or go to audibletrial.com/oneofus. And until next time, I'm going to end this the way I always do, paraphrasing the great Rocket Raccoon. When it comes to sportscasts on the internet, ain't no thing like us, except us.